Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to your favorite podcast. This is realestateinvestormba.com. We created Real Estate Investor MBA to leverage the knowledge of giants through synthesizing and providing much needed information to all investors, from the veteran investor to the new and aspiring investor. At Real Estate Investor MBA, we plan to cover pertinent information head on with our expert guests, who we will interview on what they are doing and preparing for in the days and years ahead. We aim to create MBA quality curriculum topics and themes from the information garnered among our interviewed guests in order to bring world-class value to our fellow community of listeners. We truly believe that rising water raises all ships. And by sharing this leveraged knowledge, we can create a stronger online community, which translates to stronger local, regional, and national communities. Your hosts are Jeremy Moyer, who is a veteran real estate investor and author of a new book called Are You Playing the Real Estate Game Blind? As well as Tejas Gosai, the owner of eXp Realty, the Tejas Gosai team, and also co-manager in a newly formed Regulation D private equity fund called the Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund. Now let's get to the show. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to your favorite podcast about real estate. It's Real Estate Investor MBA. And we have to say thank you every time we start because this whole concept was really just a project to talk about our community. And now we have a lot of steam. So we are now on Google Play, Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, and a few other resources. We transcribe our program as well, if you would prefer to read. We also obviously have a video that we put together. So find us on Facebook as well. And with that, my co-host, Jeremy Moyer, take it away.
Awesome. Thanks, Tejas. So I'm excited to announce our guest today. We have Greg Boots. So Greg is the founder and CEO of Executive Wealth Solutions and is also one of the founding members and CEO of Anderson Retirement Solutions. Greg is the author of Private Vault, a guide to building tax-free income in the new economy. Greg works with clients nationwide on executive wealth accumulation, non-qualified plans, retirement income planning, and college funding. Greg is also a licensed attorney, and in 2013 was listed as one of Washington State's top attorneys. Greg is also a certified financial educator, a retirement income certified professional, a licensed insurance agent, and holds several security licenses as well. These designations make him uniquely qualified to guide businesses and individuals in their wealth accumulation and income planning goals. As a nationally recognized public speaker, Greg is an authority on business formation, estate planning, retirement planning strategies, and speaks on asset protection and tax planning strategies to licensed professionals and investors all across the country. In addition to consulting and educating others, Greg has been an active real estate investor and is also the owner and operator of multiple businesses. So, Greg, thanks so much for your time today for joining us.
Thank you, Jeremy. It's my pleasure. Thank you. You said a lot there.
I did. A lot of good stuff to say.
Yeah, thank you.
Could you just tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself?
And yeah, let's just condense it in a nutshell. So my background is I'm an attorney that has focused in over the past 23 plus years in regards to teaching clients about asset protection, tax planning. The vast majority of my clients have been real estate and stock investors. So always looking at it from that angle and taking a holistic approach, because so many attorneys go out there and they just focus on the legal component and leave a big gap in regard to tax planning. And CPAs do the same thing, just focus on the tax planning component and then forget about the asset protection. So as part of my practice throughout the years, speaking across the country, I was exposed to a lot of different types of investment activities, both, you know, actively and then in retirement accounts and from an estate standpoint. And so, yes, I've been heavy in the real estate industry, mainly in a passive role, buy and hold, for about the last 20 years. but I've also found other unique opportunities from a wealth creation standpoint, really just based upon my involvement with other investors throughout the country. And that's where, you know, what we're talking about today, I didn't come up with this concept. I was first told about it in year 2000. And I thought, no way, I went to law school, I would have known about this. And it's a matter of doing the due diligence and learning that, hey, this works well. But as with anything, what I always like to express to people, degrees and whatnot aside, is that it should be approached as one piece of an overall puzzle. That's how what I do in my life. I still invest in real estate. I still do private lending, but I have these other assets that I can actively utilize.
I got to go first. So Okay. Your background is very impressive.
Thank you.
And typically Jeremy is the man at picking and finding our guests. Okay, so I got to say, I went to law school at Penn State.
Okay, great.
Never practiced a day in my life.
Yeah.
And it really, you know, helped me excel in, yes, in all of my real estate, you know,
absolutely,
life. To the tune of, you know, I built like, I can say this, like $100 million worth of stuff in my 20s. And
right,
I'm a real estate agent. To hear that you went to law school and to see what you're doing is fantastic, mm-hmm, because there's not that many people that would take this bold of an approach. And
sure,
I think you've had this, has had this much success to see your, you know, you're speaking and you have a book that you published and,
yes,
you know, to have so much video. So I think first, before we get carried away into everything, I like to start with mindset. So like, you got to keep a lot of things moving, and then you're speaking in probably different cities and things like that.
Absolutely.
How do you cope with, you know, living life and keeping at the top?
Yeah, it's all about priorities. First and foremost, just from a business standpoint, there's always new strategies coming out, and especially dealing in the tax code. There's always new wrinkles within the tax code. So I focus on that. But what's really important to me is being able to enjoy my life, taking that time with my family to do things that I enjoy. Unfortunately, I have met so many successful people that absolutely hate what they're doing, and they're miserable. And so for me, it's the most important thing is, yes, I want to keep at the top of my game. I want to be as knowledgeable as possible, still, you know, be a leader in my industry. But I also want to have that opportunity to enjoy myself as well. And for me, it's all about finding that balance. You know, that's the tricky part, is finding that balance. And so I'm real good in regards to segmenting out my days to, you know, deal with different types of topics. If I didn't do that, I would just be running around everywhere. So scheduling is really important and staying on that schedule, but also allocating that personal time. And using experts. I don't know everything. You know, I mean, well, people ask me, how do I get out of a speeding ticket? And I say, I don't know. Call my attorney. I don't know how to do that. That's not my area. You put your faith in experts in that particular arena. Not one person can't know everything.
That's awesome. So, Greg, can you... obviously, if anybody's interested in your book, they can go get your book. I actually have it. It's fabulous. Can you just give like a synopsis version of Private Vault? Sure. What is that? And how can you build tax-free wealth,
sure,
through that?
So what we're doing, and this is no secret, and I did not come up with this, is we're using permanent insurance from a wealth creation standpoint. The problem with traditionally designed insurance is somebody says, hey, I want $500,000 in coverage, but I want to pay the least amount for it. The problem with that approach is, yeah, it's good. You pass away, that $500,000 is there for your family. But there's no wealth being accumulated within the policy. So what it is that we're doing is, because these are phenomenal vehicles, is we're just approaching it in the exact opposite. We're looking at X amount of premium and getting the least amount of coverage that we can, which is completely opposite of the way that we've been taught about insurance. But the reason why we do that is now the vast majority of my premium payment, whatever that payment happens to be, I have clients, $2,000 a year to $350,000 a year. We're still designing it the same way. least amount of coverage for that premium, because the whole intent with this is to create a vehicle, a vault, that you can actively utilize and access that money throughout your entire lifetime. Whether it be, I've used mine to fund investments. I've used mine, the last two cars I purchased, I used my policies to buy the vehicles. And at the end of the day, it'll be a nice tax-free retirement income source for me. And so it's one piece, like I was saying earlier, in everything else that I do, but we're designing it for capital accumulation. And you'll have those naysayers out there, Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman, not to bash on them, but they are, buy term and invest the rest. Permanent policies are horrible from a growth vehicle. And you know what? I agree with them. If it's designed in that traditional format where you're getting the most coverage for the least amount of money. The worst one that I ever saw is it was going to take this gentleman 27 years to have as much money in his policy as what he had created or paid in from a premium. He would never be able to utilize that. So the whole focus is on maximizing that capital accumulation, not creating something that we're paying into it for lifetime. And when we stop paying, having it continue to efficiently grow. And then just one last thing, because I know I threw a lot out there, is that one of the other unique things about this, where there's nothing else out there like this. Again, my background, retirement planning, estate planning, yeah, you can borrow from your 401ks, or you can take money out of an IRA or out of a brokerage account. But when you do that, that money that you take out of that vehicle is no longer in there working for you. With a policy, as long as it's designed properly, that money that you take out is still internally in there growing. So I'll give you an example. 2 years ago, I took $100,000 out of one of my policies to fund an investment that gives me a flat 9% rate of return every month. And during the time that I've been paying that loan back, the S&P has done over almost 10%. So I'm getting that $100,000, 10% on that $100,000 inside of my policy, and I'm making 9% outside of my policy. And that's why these are so phenomenal for investors, is because we're using them in conjunction with our investments.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And it's eloquent. It's like, a sequence of events, right, to get to place. And knowing the orchestra to be able to.
Correct. Yeah, it's about making sure it's designed, because unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that say, oh, yeah, I know how to do it. And then I see the aftermath of it when I'm reviewing what somebody has. And it's all about dialing it in. And not to sound cynical, but and I'm not putting down insurance agents at all, but they make money based upon commission. And so they have to move from one person to the other. And that traditional design policy where the person's getting the most amount of death benefit for the least amount of premium, that is the biggest moneymaker for them. And so they move from person to person, satisfying that death benefit need, but never really addressing the capital opportunities that people have within these policies.
So, Greg, do you think... I guess I first heard it several years ago, and then I heard it again, and I heard it again. For me, it was, this is way too good to be true. So it can't be true, right? And then the more I've heard people taking advantage of it, that I respect it, mm-hmm. right? And I'm like, well, maybe I should look into this further, you know? Mm-hmm. And the more that I looked, the more that I spoke, you know, the more you and I talked to, actually, mm-hmm. It just made a lot of sense. And, you know, then... there you go. But like from, I guess, a general population perspective, why do you think not more people are doing? Is it more the good to be true syndrome? Is it just not having the information?
It's a completely different mindset in terms of the way that we've been conditioned to view insurance. I was brought up, and I would say the vast majority of people were brought up, is pay the least amount for the most amount of coverage. Buy term and invest the difference. Problem is, most people don't invest the difference. And the reason why term insurance is so inexpensive is that almost 99% of people outlive their term. And then it's significantly expensive 20, 30 years later. So we've been conditioned And I understand it. This is the way I approach my auto policy. I want to pay the least amount for the most amount of money. I want to pay the least amount for the most amount of coverage. But what people don't understand is in regard to permanent policies, they have this cash value component. But there's so many naysayers out there, public naysayers that say that these don't work. And it's because they haven't seen them as being designed properly. They don't work if they're not designed properly. They don't grow in value. It all comes down to the design. So it's a paradigm shift. It just in regards to how we approach a particular wealth creation vehicle. Same thing is true in regard to real estate. Real estate investors have that paradigm shift. Otherwise, they would just continue with their 9-to-5 job every day. They're looking for other sources in regards to generate revenue. It's about making your money work for you as opposed to you having to work for your money. And so that's the biggest hurdle, is that people have been conditioned to view it differently, and they have heard from pundits that it doesn't work, but they've never really looked at the numbers, because it all comes down to the numbers, just like you, Jeremy. I mean, I was so skeptical. How can this work? I would have heard about it. I mean, my mom's a retired teacher, but for a short period of time, she was an insurance agent. And she never once mentioned this. So I didn't know about it. But it took another investor to give me a little bit of education. And that's why I read up and what ultimately ended up me prompting to write the book. And the last thing is that, and unfortunately, there's some books out there that say, put all of your money into the policy, every penny you have. Never do that. It's one piece of the other stuff that you do.
Now, that makes a lot of sense. The financial, if you want to call it a game, right? It's a lot of moving pieces on a
board. You want to have diversity in assets. It's the diversity that's going to give you not only a successful working years, but successful retirement years where you don't have to be concerned about running out of money.
Mm-hmm. I'll ask. So I'm just assuming you have a lot of high net worth individuals and probably accredited investors,
Correct. Things
like that. So in what phase of, like, because we have a lot of folks that are just starting out too, right? They're buying their first few multifamilies. They might be in their 20s, late 20s, early 30s. Yeah. And they're still on their 9-to-5, right? When does somebody kind of, cross the threshold to be able to work with somebody like you? Is it like when they are an accredited investor? I just want to figure out when.
No, that's a great question. Not at all, because there's this impression in terms of making this work that you have to dump tens of thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars in there to make it work. And that's couldn't be further from the truth. I have a lot of clients where they're in their early 20s, late teens. They're putting $1,000, $2,000 in a year. And the premium doesn't matter. We're getting the least amount of coverage. So we're still going to get good compounding. And when somebody's young, they have something more than I have at age 50, and that's longer time compounding. And so they don't have to fund as something as if I'm starting out at age 50 compared to somebody starting out at age 25. They don't have to fund it to the same extent that I would, because they have, 2.5 decades on me in terms of being younger. So I have, again, clients treat it like IRAs where they're putting $5,000, $6,000 in a year. The younger somebody is, the better the internal compounding. There's no doubt about that, because they have time on their side. But I have a lot of clients in their 60s, my oldest clients in his early 70s when we set it up. When we're in our 60s and 70s, we're funding it heavier. I mean, we have to be looking at $40,000-$50,000 a year to make it work. Somebody's in their 20s, their 30s, $2,000 a year, $3,000 a year, $5,000 a year. Somebody's in their 40s, $5,000 a year, $7,000 a year. We can make it work. I always recommend people use this as a measuring stick, because we're looking at the growth super conservatively within these illustrations, which is important. We want to have a realistic expectation on what these are going to do. It is not a get-rich-quick deal. So let's say, for example, I have a 20-year-old doing $2,000 a year. In 10 years, there's not going to be 50 grand in there. We're going to be above the 20 grand mark. We're going to be above break even in 10 years. And theoretically, you could stop paying it and it'll continue to grow, even no longer putting in any more money. But we won't double within that 10-year period. Does that mean he has to wait until that 10-year period to borrow the money? Absolutely not. The intent is we want to start using this money right away, because let's say, for example, in year five, he takes 10 grand out to pay down a credit card or whatever it happens to be. The insurance company is going to treat that 10 grand as still being in there growing, and it doesn't hurt our compounding. So there's really no magic number. What we look at is, how old is a person? What phase are they within their life? What kind of income do they have? How soon do they want to borrow the money? Are they more retirement driven? And it's all about just dialing in that number that works best for them. My kids have policies and they're 19 and 16. I got those policies for those kids when they were little, and you know, I was putting a grand a year into them. They've grown tremendously well. And what the intent is that as a parent, I'm the owner of the policy, is when they become financially mature, I will transfer that over to them, and then they continue to put that money in there, and it will put them so far ahead of where I was when I was 30, 35 years old, because we have all of those years of growth. So I'll do that sometimes where I have an individual that can't get insurance, or maybe they're 80 years old, but they have these grandkids that they want to set something up for. And it becomes a great vehicle. So there's a lot of different ways to skin the cat when we're looking at a strategy.
That's awesome. So great. Let's try to tie this into real estate. So you gave the example before about borrowing some money from the policy. The money is acts like it's still there, compound, yes. And you use it, I think you mentioned, for like a 9% yield.
Uh-huh.
Is it that easy for a real estate investor? Do they need to get loan approval from the insurance company? If it's there, they can take it out to put as a down payment or enter a partnership? Is there any restrictions?
Yeah, fantastic question.
Yeah.
So this is where it's so different than everything else, in that all we do is, as long as the loan's under $25,000, you can just go into your own little portal and borrow the money out, and the money's immediately into your account. Once we're over 25K, we just submit an application. They don't ask what you're using the money for. They don't ask how you want to pay it back. They don't care how you pay it back or if you pay it back. All they want to know is, how much do you want to borrow and where do you want it? And so I just did one yesterday for $42,000. We just submitted the application. They have to approve it within 5 business days. They have to approve it no matter what. But then they give themselves a little lag time. The norm is 2 to 3 business days. So I would imagine, if not tomorrow, Monday, he'll have that money in his account. And he will then dictate how he pays it back. And so it's a super quick turnaround in regard to getting the money. And there's no formal loan payments. Last year, I took borrowed money out to buy a car. I'm pretty good at paying it monthly, but in December, I didn't make a payment. Nobody's going to come and repo my car because I don't have any formal loan structure with the insurance company. And then I'm going to get to the point in time when I decide to retire and I'm going to borrow that money out and never pay it back. And all that happens is, when I die, however much my wife and I have been able to use and enjoy that money while I was alive, it just gets subtracted off of the top of the death benefit. So my wife and kids are still protected, but we got to enjoy the money while I was still around.
So not only is it tax planning for retirement income, but it's also insurance.
Correct.
Right. And then some of the policies, if I'm not mistaken, they actually have some long-term care riders.
Great question. So they have the traditional old view with insurance is, yeah, you have it when the kids are young, and this is why term's fine. By the time you're 65, you don't need it any longer. Kids are grown up, house is paid off, et cetera. Well, that is old school thinking. Nowadays with policies, permanent policies, they have, they're called accelerated benefits. And all this means is that a portion of that death benefit is paying out while we're alive if certain medical conditions arise. So the ones that every insurance company has is terminal illness. These are all bad things. Don't get me wrong. Somebody passes away, doctor says you're going to pass away within a year or 2 years. We can have 95% of that death benefit pay out while we're alive. And we can use that money however we see fit. Then the next important one is called critical illness. This is our heart attack, stroke, cancer diagnosis situation. Bad things, but don't necessarily mean we're going to pass away. We could have 90% of that payout. So if I was diagnosed with cancer today, something incurable, like bone cancer, high mortality rate. It's not medical insurance. So let's say, for example, that they're in Sweden, there's an experimental treatment that they're having great success on. I can have that policy pay out 90% to me while I'm alive and go to Sweden and have that done if I want, because my medical's not going to pay for it. I can use that money however I see fit. And then the biggest one is in regards to long-term care. In life insurance, it's called chronic illness. And same triggering factors as long-term care, when we can't bathe ourselves or feed ourselves or go to the bathroom on our own, when we can't do two of the main six, that death benefit will start paying out monthly. And it is such an important safety net. I have seen life's work completely wiped out when somebody ends up in a long-term care scenario. And I hate saying it because it makes me sound so cold, but just looking at it from a financial standpoint is that it is better for an ill spouse to in retirement to pass away than it is to go into long-term care when we're looking at wealth preservation. Because what ends up happening is typically it's us. We're the ones that get sick first, not our spouses. And we're the ones that suck down the assets within the estate. And then we don't leave anything for our surviving spouses. And our surviving spouses are more likely than not to have some type of medical condition during the rest of her life or his life. And so it really puts them at a huge economic disadvantage. The fastest growing segment of the population falling below the retirement line is widows. Because the husband gets sick first, husband dies first, sucks up all of the assets, and now there's nothing left for the surviving spouse. So that is, I appreciate you bringing that up because that is such a super important component. And the beauty about these, they're freebies. The insurance company's on the hook day one to pay the death benefit. All they're doing is if that need arises, we can have that start to pay out while we're alive.
I love free stuff. Yeah. That's awesome. So, Greg, the more I wrap my head around all this, when I originally started learning about it, it was like all these little rabbit holes. Yeah. And there's so much information to fully grasp it. Like, if you know, those who are listening, they're interested in learning more. Like, where do you have extra resources? Do you have videos to go into this? Like,
yeah, without a doubt, because it all comes down to education, because there's so much different information out there. And this is one of the reasons why I wrote my book, because if you do research on it, you'll fall into camps and say, whole life's the only way to go, everything else is horrible. Or IULs are the only way to go, everything else is horrible. Now, the world's not like that black and white. It's like saying there's only one way to make money in real estate. So I wrote my book covering both. And so you can sign up on my website for a consultation and you'll get a free...
I'm controlling the site. Where should we go?
Of my book. It's executivews.com. And if you click there on free copy of Greg's latest book, you can get it. But at the bottom... I always want my clients or people I talk to have some type of education foundation, because I know that as an attorney, I'm really bad at information dump. And so I create this online learning center at the bottom where there's a series of videos and they're broken up into 20-minute little increments on how we're designing them and the different types of policies and how we actively utilize the policies. And it gives a really good overview, in addition to the book, in terms of how this should be created, why it's good, and why it's not, might not necessarily be a one size fits all.
It's awesome. Beautiful website too.
Thank you.
Very functional. You want to ask one more?
Sure. So I guess I was going to ask, like, for someone just getting started, just hearing this for the first time, is this probably the best thing to do, Greg, is just to go get educated, watch some of these videos, just reach out if they have questions?
Great question, because this is a lot to take in within this short format. And most people are visual learners, watch the videos, see what they can do, see what they don't do. And then we can, I'm more than happy to have a one-on-one conversation, because what worked best for me might not be best for you. And it's all individualized.
Okay. And then do you want to just slowly say what your website is?
Sure.
They can write it.
It's executive, executiv, this is in Victor, EW as in wealth, S as in solutions.com.
Awesome. Super good. Seriously, thank you so much. We're excited. Yeah, excited to get this out into the wire too. And hopefully one day have you back.
Sure.
Maybe we can talk about some more of the applications and things like that. But
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It was definitely my pleasure.
Thanks, Greg.
Hey, thanks, Aaron.
This is Real Estate Investor MBA, the best, can we swear? Can I say best damn podcast around? It should. But yeah, we love real estate. We love to talk about how to navigate the waters. I actually shouldn't announce this too early, but we're redoing our website a bit. So it's an exciting time for us to kind of evolve into 2021 and get out of COVID. So everybody keep your ears out and make sure you check us out online, Facebook, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, all the above, Real Estate Investor MBA. And that's Jeremy Moyer. And thank you again, Greg. Tejas Gosai, we'll talk to you.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.